If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's Tuesday, and we're here every Tuesday and Thursday at noon to bring you the best information available on local news. Here we recommend you turn off the TV, only check social media for like family pictures and stuff, and then tune in at noon and find out what's going on locally. Now, if you get frustrated, you're more likely you can actually find the person here that you're frustrated with. Unlike the national issues where all you can do is yell at the TV, you can actually go find a politician here in town to yell at if you're frustrated about something. And I listen, I'm kidding about yelling, but you can find someone to go talk to or address your concern. You know, when you get mad at these national issues and all you do is yell at the TV, your blood pressure gets higher and you turn the TV off. But here locally, if you focus on some of the things, and listen, there's plenty to be frustrated about here locally. There's also some good things going on. So I encourage you to try to think about your life from a local perspective out. And I know this federal and state stuff can be nerve-wracking, and you know, it can make it seem like there's no hope. But you know, look, turn locally and listen. There's plenty of opportunities this week. We've got a county meeting starting at 3 today. We've got a school board meeting at 6. We've got a city commission meeting tomorrow, and Dr. Erwin Jackson is going to be there. And there's an issue revolving around his possible presentation. We'll talk about that a little bit. But also, there's some breaking news on the county regards to the vaccine mandate policy. The hammer has hit from the state. There's a fine of $3.75 million for, 714 violations of the rule that Governor DeSantis put in place regarding asking about vaccine mandate health information. And so if you remember back when this happened, Vince Long, the county administrator, put this into place where you had to be vaccinated or you were going to be fired October 1st. Looks like the last we heard was 14 people were let go. But the issue was the state asked, wait a minute, how many people did you ask if they were vaccinated? And evidently that number was 714. And so it's $5,000, I believe, per violation. So they got a bill or are going to get a fine for $3.75 million. And that's the latest on that. So are the feds going to come in and pay that fine as they are doing with some of the school board fines that have been levied across the state? We'll have to see about that. But during our last segment today, we'll talk about the county meeting. Couple of interesting issues there. Actually, the county administrator, Vince Long, is receiving his annual review. And this is sort of like, each commissioner gets to grade. And Taos Reports did an article on this. We'll go over it. But let me tell you what, he's a superstar among the eyes of the elected officials that he serves. And so we'll go over the details of that. With the county, there is, more information about their actual priorities in terms of the federal legislative priorities and state legislative priorities in terms of things they're asking for, positions they want to take. And so we'll go over that a little bit. In our next segment, we'll deal with the city. And as I told you, Dr. Jackson has got an issue. And, you know, it's an interesting one because it doesn't really involve a specific position. What it involves is how local government is interacting with their citizens. We've seen that, the DOJ has interceded on or is trying to get involved with how parents are showing up to these school board meetings and becoming a little raucous. Well, a few years back, it was Dr. Jackson, they had a kill switch put in. And when he would start saying something they didn't like, they would hit the kill switch. It was an unbelievable story. And you can go to Taos Reports and check back on that. Well, now, in today's environment, there are obviously things like that are being concerned. If you look in Orlando, they've tried to figure out ways where, they're broadcasting these meetings on video, and they can be found on social media and TV. Now people have figured out that they can become stars by going to these county meetings and saying outrageous things. And so now, you know, the content of these of the First Amendment speeches are sort of butting up against the notion of civility in these meetings. And so one of the issues here, which we'll talk about in the next segment, involves Dr. Jackson and something that he's been, you know, he wants to do, and they're butting heads a little bit about the technology available to do it. So we'll talk about that. Also, the city commission is going to be weighing in. They have an item on House Bill 1, which was the anti-riot bill. And so I'll get you up to date on what the possibilities there are in terms of what the city's looking to do. They're looking to partner with some groups that have some, I will call them extreme groups. And they're extreme groups on both sides of the ideological spectrum, of course. And then we'll talk about, it looks like there's another, the final vote on to take the proposed $4 million sales price for this lot on Gain Street, which was a little bit controversial. I believe it was a 3-1 vote with Commissioner Matlow abstaining because of a possible conflict of interest. That'll be brought up again at the city meeting. And then at the bottom hour, we'll spend the whole segment on Leon County Schools. They've got a meeting today. We'll go over two or three issues there that they're going to be addressing. But we want to spend the majority of that this time on the schools. Again, we're going to focus on Montford Middle School. The issue of what social messages to push in these middle schools and the parameters around what they're doing, I think should be a concern for all parents. We'll have a story posted later today about school officials, a couple of school officials telling teachers that they don't have any obligation to share information they learn from their students with their parents. Now, these are middle school kids, and so what they're doing is they're advocating that the students come and talk to the teachers about a very personal issue. It could be considered a mental health issue. And then they're telling them that they can't share that information, or they're not obligated to share that information with parents. And we'll go through the emails or exactly what was said. But the issue here is not exactly about this specific item, but it's about the overall overarching issue of what are the policies in Leon County Schools, and we'll say for the middle schools right now, in terms of the relationships between what teachers can hide from parents or are obligated to talk to parents, and also about these social issues. You know, where are we getting the policy? Who gets to decide what lifestyle question or what controversy of the day gets promoted within the walls of these classrooms? We can't seem to get an answer. We keep waiting for policies. But one thing we are starting to see through these emails that we're getting is that national groups seem to have more standing with the local teachers than actual officials at the school district. Because we're seeing them forwarded emails. We're seeing them reach out to people that are not even tied to the school district, seeking advice on what to do. And so anyway, we'll talk about what's going to happen at the meeting, the school board meeting tonight, and also the issues that we're discovering at Montford Middle School, which, look, it's just not at that middle school. But obviously, these are issues that we're getting information on there. So we'll talk about that. All right, stay tuned. When we get back, we'll give you an update on the Tallahassee City Commission meeting, which will take place on Wednesday at 3 o'clock. So stay tuned.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Appreciate you joining us. Great to have a win right before a bye week. So you get 2 weeks of just nothing but pure confidence. And then I don't know what would be better than playing UMass after a bye week. It's like two bye weeks in a row. So, anyway, again, thanks for tuning in. Everybody's on, I think, a high from the great win on Saturday. And so let's sort of come a little bit down off the high and look at local government with the three meetings we have this week. So I want to talk to you a little bit about what's going on at the city commission meeting. First, I wanted to, you know, before meetings start or right after they start, they have a period there where people can get up and speak. And this part of the meeting, which has been, it's been there forever, but it used to be that you would just get people that were very adamant on specific issues. It sort of expanded because obviously of the prevalence of social media, people can go and speak and say something and then, you know, go back and put it on their social media. And, you know, they also have two different speaking periods. They have the period where you can speak about a specific item that's being voted on. And then they have what they call unagended speakers, where you can just get up and talk about anything. I mean, I don't think I've seen anybody really get reprimanded for talking about something that's not germane. But it's so anyway, what's happened now is there was an issue back, and we talked about this previously, that with Dr. Erwin Jackson, who obviously used to great effect the 3 minutes that was allowed to speak on different things. But there was back in 2014. There was a kill switch that was installed, and that was a big brouhaha. I mean, the local media, including Taos Reports, covered it ad nauseum, and it sort of embarrassed the city a little bit. And so, you know, they removed that. But now, you know, after these indictments took place, Dr. Jackson did not show up as much to the meetings. But now, with the guilty findings of JT Burnett and the sentencing of former city commissioner Scott Maddox, he has gone back to the meetings. And the last meeting, he was interested in putting up a flyer or putting up material so that people could see on like a big screen, a video screen, and he was not allowed to do that. And so, the reasons why, we're not really sure. I mean, there were some technical issues that were claimed. And so now Dr. Erwin Jackson, who's never been criticized for not following through on things, will be coming back again on Wednesday to see if he can get this flyer up for everyone to see. Now, again, I would say Dr. Jackson is an expert at dealing with this in terms of getting up and using the 3 minutes. And so, he pushes the envelope in terms of, you know, what can take place. But, you know, this clearly falls under, you know, First Amendment, and it makes the city commission look bad if they don't, you know, allow somebody to put something up and be viewed. Obviously, I guess there could be some decency parameters on that. But anyway, we'll be keeping an eye on this because, you know, again, there wasn't that long ago with the sort of the kill switch was put in place to cut off speakers. That's been 7 years ago. And now, you know, as things progress, people want to put things up so that they can be seen in the video. And, you know, this becomes an issue because what is seen, like when they are broadcasting this meeting, there's a communications department with the city that broadcasts this, and they get to choose what is seen. So, you know, it just gets, there's a lot of issues here. So we'll keep an eye on that. Now, another one of the issues that is being driven by policy is the city dealing with a challenge to HB1. This House Bill 1 is the anti-riot bill that was passed by the state legislature and signed by Governor DeSantis. Now, you know, before I get into this, I'll tell you, I'm not a fan of this bill, just like I'm not a fan of the federal government trying to find ways to go to school board meetings and implement federal laws. I mean, there are state law enforcement, there's local law enforcement to deal with anything that happens at a school board meeting. And I think it's sort of ironic that happens with the criticism here in the state of Florida on HB1, which I tend to agree with, is that there are already laws in place to deal with people that are protesting and become violent. I think this was clearly a political move, which we see a lot of these days on both sides of the aisle. So, for what, having said that, the city thinks this is a top priority to go ahead and challenge this legally. The statement of the issue, which will be presented at the meeting, is the city commission directed city attorney to bring back an agenda item to generally discuss the litigation which the city of Gainesville approved for filing in the courts of Florida, which challenges the state constitutionality of HB 1. A particular concern to the Tallahassee City Commission was the provisions which purport to give the governor through the administrative commission the authority to alter the budgets of local governments should they reduce their law enforcement budgets. That goes back to the whole defund the police movement and Governor DeSantis and some other governors saying, look, if you decrease these budgets, you know, we're going to fine you or whatever. The agenda item presents the legal arguments contained in the draft complaint approved on August 5th by the city of Gainesville. So here, basically what they're doing, it's trying to become, they're piggybacking on this lawsuit by the city of Gainesville. Now, I'm not going to bore you with all the different legal arguments here, but I will tell you that the decision to legally challenge this by the city commission, I mean, is this really a top priority of the city of Tallahassee? Is this something that really is going to make a difference? You know, that's a decision as a voter and a citizen, you'll have to decide. Obviously the city, our city commission has decided, and I'm not sure who gets credit for this. I guess they voted to have this brought back. So now they decided this is a priority and they're going to go ahead and try to legally challenge the state constitutionality of this HB 1. The problem that I have with this reading through it is that part of the option here is they're going to vote to direct the city attorney to enter into a professional services agreement with attorneys engaged by the Community Justice Project, the Public Rights Project, and or the Southern Poverty Law Center to represent the city of Tallahassee for free as attorney for free. Now, you know, I think most people have learned nothing is for free. So these three groups, which I've done some research on, and as I said earlier, these are far left groups. The Southern Poverty Law Center has been found guilty of basically, when I say found guilty, let's say they settled a lawsuit for close to $4 million for basically tarnishing someone's reputation for calling them, I guess putting them on their website, calling them a person of hate. They had to remove Ben Carson from their website when they said some of his statements were, quote, hateful. So they take this responsibility of denoting hate groups. And as you can tell, back in the day, you know, their focus was the Ku Klux Klan and groups that were clearly engaged in racist or hateful behavior. But now, as everything else has happened, it's become more of a place to espouse their political positions on things, i.e. the Ben Carson issue. And so anyway, we're thinking about going into basically engaging into a professional services agreement with that group. The other two groups, Public Rights Project and the Community Justice Project, are groups that are funded by George Soros and Mark Zuckerberg. And again, left-wing leaning groups that we're going to throw in with. Now, my view on this would be, look, if you find this as a priority, HB 1, and you want to challenge it in court, that's the first hurdle to get over. The second hurdle is, all right, let's don't partner with these groups. It's not for free. We're giving credibility to these groups, which fall into the category that we've talked about lately here, groups that try to separate us so that we hate each other. So if it's a priority, let's go ahead and ante up the money and get a lawyer to challenge this law. So anyway, that'll be decided at the city commission. All right, when I get back, we will talk about the Leon County schools. Lots to talk about there, so stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Appreciate you joining me. We'll pivot to the Leon County School Board's three meetings this week. Busy local government week. Leon County, the city, and Leon County schools. So I want to run through a couple issues, and then we'll talk about the specifics of this issue we're following at Taos Reports. And, you know, it really revolves around middle schools and sort of what the policies are, you know, district policies on some issues. And I just don't think, and we'll get into it, but there seems to be a lack of direction coming to some of these schools on what is to be done on promoting some of these social issues. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But first, just run down on a couple issues that'll be discussed tonight. Obviously, I think there's two. Looks like there's two board members, Joey Bowen and Alva Striplin, who'll be are asking basically or wanting to hear about the COVID numbers. Ms. Striplin's attached a CD indicator and threshold chart. It'll be interesting to see how that is discussed at the meeting. And then Joey Bowen is looking to provide updated COVID data. Wants to continue doing that. Now, obviously, we've heard in the last meeting, our last couple weeks, Superintendent Hannah talking about the end of October could maybe go back to the opt-out. The opt-out policy for parents who don't want to wear masks. So we'll see how that goes. But again, this CDC indicators and thresholds will be interesting to see because we're looking at real numbers. Because if you remember, Superintendent Hannah said, you know, if it gets below 10 cases a day, which I think is what we've done over the last 2 weeks based on the COVID dashboard. So we'll see how those that plays out. Also, there's going to be a safety update, a lot in the news about students bringing weapons to class. John Hunkier will be talking about that. There's no materials provided in the agenda, so we'll have to see what happens there at the meeting. One other issue I want to talk to before we get to the Montford issue is there's an item here which involves federal money, almost $30 million that has been directed to the school board. And basically, there's an agenda item to show how that money has been spent related to COVID. And most of that money is, if you look at the specifics, and Taos Reports will have a story on this so you can look at it. But a lot of money going to, I think it was $13 million going to secure Chromebooks. A lot of the other left other money going to hire teachers or provide teachers more money to try to mitigate the learning gaps that have happened over the last year because of the COVID issue. And so, again, you know, one of the things, there's no doubt that COVID has had an impact on so many different aspects of our life, from the economy and obviously school, but there's been a lot of money available to try to help mitigate some of these issues. And that's the case here. With this federal money, $29.9 million. All right, now, pivoting to the issue that we've been following, you know, this is actually, you know, I sort of put this in the middle school bailiwick in terms of what's happening. We did an article on an issue with a gender transition study that was done, or a gender transition plan that was done for a student without telling her parents at one of the middle schools here in Leon County. And also the plan sort of it laid out a way to keep the issue from being revealed to the parents. We wrote about that, and continuing, that's still an ongoing issue because Superintendent Hannah was surprised to find out that that was something that was being done at the schools, and they're trying to rewrite the policy, although it's, you know, the parents of the person that was impacted, and you go back and read the story on that, is concerned that it's not moving fast enough. It's been a while and the policy has not been changed. And I think if you go back and look at some of the emails on that, you'll see that there's, you know, there's some officials at the Leon County School District office that feel that state law allows for this to happen. And you can actually see that in that story. I mean, her name was Dr. Kathleen Rogers, said that state law and federal law allowed for this gender transition plan to be implemented with a student, you know, without the parents knowing. And so maybe that's the holdup on getting a policy in place. Superintendent Hannah has told, talked to TR and said, listen, unless there is a physical issue here in terms of suicide or abuse, is that the parents are to be involved with all these decisions. Now, you know, that is not a written policy. That is a policy that's come down from the superintendent. So, it's something that has not been, quote, codified. Now, on the heels of this, we got information about, some things going on at Montford Middle School, and this relates also to the gender/sexuality issue. And they basically, there were some emails that showed that a club at Montford Middle School, the Gay Straight Alliance, was requesting teachers to put safe space flags that were coming out to be put in the classroom ahead of October 11th, which is coming out day for people who feel like they need to do that. And so they were going to put these flags in classrooms to signify that this was a safe place. Now, we got a bunch of emails back and forth from teachers. There were teachers who were concerned about this, that, you know, they were violating some rules in the sense that, you know, we don't promote, you know, other social campaigns. We asked about this, and there really wasn't a policy of which social campaign you decide to promote. And so we did a story about that, but then we got some more emails, and we'll have a story up this afternoon. And it's about how the sponsor of the GSA club at Montford and someone else affiliated with that club were actually giving teachers advice on how to deal with students that come to them. And part of the advice was they're not obligated to talk to parents about what the students are talking to teachers about. Now, unless it is, again, crosses the line of physical abuse or suicidal thoughts. But so, and these are in emails. And the thing is that the teachers are asking these club sponsors for policy direction. And there's no citing of a school policy. It's just that these club sponsors and the people that are advocating for these safe space flags were telling the teachers, look, you know, you're not obligated to talk to parents about this issue. They're giving advice to teachers. Now, the other concern here, and specifically on this issue, is it looks like teachers are being asked to deal with, you know, sort of mental health issues with students. Is this actually what we want to be happening in classrooms? And is this the policy? Do we not have, you know, do we not, if we have students that have these issues and they want to talk to someone, do we not have a designated mental health expert or guidance person that they would go talk to? Why is it that every teacher suddenly becomes a confidant for a student related to their gender/sexuality? Now, you can take this a step further and say, beyond that issue, other issues like drugs or other lifestyle decisions, are teachers not allowed? Are they encouraged not to talk to parents if a student who is struggling in class comes up and talks to a teacher and says, "Look, you know, I'm addicted to drugs or I'm doing drugs. That's why I'm doing bad in my classes." Well, is the teacher not obligated to tell the parent that? It almost looks to me like, if you read these emails, that for middle school, the officials at Montford have decided that you can't trust parents. Now, obviously, there are some parents that may go crazy if they're given certain information, but the problem here is that for that percentage of those parents that are not going to be compassionate or, respectful to a student's decision, you are not allowing the parents that would behave, quote, properly, to even be engaged in the issue with their children. Now, if we go back to the issue on the gender transition plan, I will tell you that the parents of that child had already had her engaged in mental health privately. And so, again, the issue here with school officials at the school level intervening between the relationship between the parents and the kids without citing policies, I think, is a major concern. And, you know, we can't get a lot of answers out of the school board. Now, I've given Superintendent Hannah talk to me about the issue with the gender transition plan, but I have gotten nowhere with trying to get the policy that tells you what social campaign you can promote in a middle school. Now, I've seen some emails were saying, well, look, you know, lifestyle choices are different from religion. So, you know, you don't have to promote religion. Well, you know, how about other issues, you know, like pro-life, or which classrooms are safe for students who want to wear pro-life stickers during, you know, I guess pro-life month. So this is an issue that I think is one of the reasons why you're seeing a lot of frustrated parents show up at school board meetings. There's no policies that are driving this. And so, listen, this is something we're going to stay on and we're going to continue to cover. Like to get some input from school board members. We'll reach out to them. So anyway, all right, during the last segment, stay tuned. We'll cover the county meeting, which is going to be happening in about, I guess, about 2 hours. So stay tuned to Above the Fold. We'll be right back after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here, our last segment on Tuesday. As I said earlier at the beginning of the show, the state has sent an invoice to Leon County for $3.57 million for fines associated with the vaccine mandate. That's a breaking story. 714 violations of the rule. This is obviously going to be settled in court. And a good segue to Leon County Administrator Vince Long's review. Obviously, Vince Long was the one who had implemented this vaccine mandate. If you did not get vaccinated, did not show proof of vaccination by October 1st, you would be let go from your job. I think 14 people were eventually fired. 30 people were able to get exemptions, and the remainder were vaccinated. I think Vince Long would tell you that that's a pretty effective way to get people vaccinated, pretty high rate there. However, there were issues with the process, and you know, he was seen on CNN promoting this. And also, you know, one of the comments that I thought might get him in trouble if it did go to court was he was saying that they needed to do this to be sure that they could provide services because they were you know, a local government. There are a lot of local governments here in Leon County that did not do this mandate and were able to provide services. So anyway, we'll see what happens with this. Like I said, it will undoubtedly go through the courts, and, you know, Mr. Long has vowed to fight it. And there's no doubt that he has the support from his bosses, which are the seven Leon County commissioners. Every year he gets reviewed, or all county administrators. And the process here is, you know, try to do a little bit of independence, because as the county administrator, he runs everything. And so what they do is the county administrator provides an annual report, and they use that as the basis for evaluating the county administrator. And if you go to Talus Reports, we've got a story up on this. Leon County Commissioners, semicolon, Vince Long is almost perfect. And they rate him on a number of issues. It looks like seven different categories across 39 issues, I believe, seven key areas. And it's on a scale of 1 to 5, and they give him an average rating. And four of the commissioners rated him perfect, 5.0. That's Commissioner Nick Maddox, Bill Proctor, Rick Miner, who's the chairman now, and also Commissioner Carolyn Cummings. Now, the other people didn't rate him a 5.0, but it was pretty close. 2 4.98s, which was Commissioner Jimbo Jackson and Commissioner Brian Welch. And then the lowest of the bunch was 4.93. Again, and that not very low, was Commissioner Dozier. Carolyn Cummings wrote, the county administrator shown and continues to demonstrate strong leadership and management skills, not only to Leon County, but to county administrators throughout the state of Florida and the nation. His leadership throughout the COVID-19 pandemic has been stellar, and his recognition for the protection of first responders and all county employees has been lauded. So right there, I think that tells you the support he's getting from the elected officials. And I think she's referring, obviously, to the vaccine mandate policy. Chairman Rick Miner also wrote, throughout this evaluation period, Leon County's government has continued to face a multitude of challenges stemming from global and national issues. And he goes on to say that that as such, the demands upon local government are greater than they've been in many years. In my assessment, our county administrator and his staff continue to do an exceptional job serving the citizens of Leon County. So I don't know how much discussion there'll be today on this, but if you're interested, you can go to talisreports.com and you can actually see there's a 24-page document that shows the individual evaluations from each of the Leon County commissioners. So there's a link there for you to go look at that. And so, again, I think it's, you know, if you hearken back to these administrators, you look at the city commission, they had Anita Favors for a number of years. And I remember doing an article about her being the most powerful person in Leon County. Actually, I think it was the most powerful administrator in the state of Florida because of how much oversight she had on so many different issues that aren't even under the city manager's list of duties across the state. And she had been there for a long time. I don't know how many years she was there before she retired, but she was the go-to person. You could almost say now, looking at this and talking to me, talking to some people behind the scenes, you know, Vince Long is probably one of the most powerful people in Leon County. It takes four people to get rid of him. And you look at these evaluations, that's not happening anytime soon. I mean, and not that it should. I'm not saying that it should. I'm just saying that he's got a lot of leeway, a lot of criticism coming towards him on this vaccine mandate. But this is more of a political issue, and this is not a community that's divided politically, you know, Republicans, Democrats. These basically are all, I would say, moderate to liberal Democrats that are on the county commission. So, you know, if he has to pay a $3.5 million fine for this vaccine mandate, I don't think that that's going to really hurt him in the eyes of his bosses. Now, you know, at the same time, there was criticism about him going on CNN. But if you read Commissioner Cummings' evaluation, I mean, she is happy about his leadership throughout the state and the nation on these COVID issues. So anyway, Vince Long is in a very good position with his bosses. And, you know, despite some of the recent, this issue that has become so political, I think most people will tell you that he's a very good administrator, very efficient, very effective in getting the nuts and bolts of local government done right. So anyway, all right, I'll leave that there and move on to the last issue for the day. And that is to take a look at what the county is pushing in terms of some of their state and federal issues. I'm not going to go through all these, and we'll have an article up on this. Obviously, a lot of this is asking for money from both the state and the feds on a lot of different projects. If you look at the bigger money projects, they're roads, Northeast Gateway, $25 million, Capital Circle Southwest, $100 million, Woodville Highway, $30 million. But I thought what was so interesting is some of the policy issues and some of the state policy issues. I'll go through a few of these. Support the protection of the state workforce and oppose any reductions to state employee benefits. Obviously, being the seat of state government, that is a big issue. Oppose statutory changes to law that would allow the concealed carrying of firearms into college or university facilities. That obviously is a controversial issue, and one that the state deals with. Support legislation to effectuate the relocation of the Confederate monument that is currently located at the state of Florida Capitol Complex. Another controversial issue. Support legislation authorizing virtual meetings of local government bodies during a declared state of emergency. And then also, let's see, there was one other one here. I talked about the support legislation establishing May 20th as Florida's Emancipation Day as a state holiday. And then some of the federal policy issues, I'll just give you one or two of these. Support the city of Tallahassee's application for a foreign trade zone at the Tallahassee International Airport. And then we'll see, one other one here is support the passage of the Infrastructure Investments and Jobs Act, including direct federal funding to support local infrastructure projects. Now, that's interesting there. I don't see any support for the $3.5 trillion sort of safety net legislation. But anyway, the infrastructure project is definitely here. So we'll have a story up on that. You can check that out. But again, thanks for tuning in. We'll be here Thursday at noon for another edition of Above the Fold. So tune in then. Have a great afternoon.